Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Weber, Chief Pilot for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Aviation Unit and aviation speaker from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Rich Weber, with the Florida Aviation Network, broadcasting in the clear from the Howard Hughes exhibit in the Florida Air Museum at Lakeland Linder Regional Airport for Sun and Fun 2013. And we like to, this is the 39th consecutive year of Sun and Fun fly-in and exposition. And we'd like to take a minute to say hello to all the men and women of our military. We always want to keep you guys in mind. We appreciate everything that you do for us and for our country. And I'm bringing to you today Mr. Kermit Weeks, the founder and owner of Fantasy Flight. Welcome.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come talk with us and let all of our viewers know kind of what's going on and where you've come from. And give us a little background of kind of where you started flying. You started flying at a young age.
I did, actually. I was always fascinated with aircraft very early on, but I was fascinated with a lot of things. And when I was 13 years old, I heard that song Snoopy and the Red Baron on the radio, and it was like a predestined cue that set me off on that path with a fascination with flight and aircraft. Flew models, ended up building most of my first airplane in high school, attended the first my first Oshkosh, the second one they had in 1971. I've been a member since I was 15 years old, so EA has been a big part of my life.
Not many people can say that. Not many people can say that they built their own airplane in high school. They might say, oh, I rebuilt the engine in my Chevy or something like that, but not many people can say that, so that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, no, it was the beginning of a great aviation career. I flew about 15 years with the U.S. Aerobatic Team. I was very successful. Designed and built my two aerobatic airplanes, the Weeks Special, the Weeks Solution. Won 20 medals at the world level in those two airplanes and was two times U.S. national champion. And in my mid-20s, I was in a fortunate position to be able to afford to collect vintage historic airplanes. Wanted to share my passion and good fortune with people. So I started a museum in Miami called the Weeks Air Museum, for lack of a more creative name at the time. I quickly grew the facility. Life kind of led me up here to Central Florida, and we created Fantasy of Flight and opened 10 years later. So we've been there almost 17 and a half years, and looking forward to the future.
Well, there's quite a bit to talk about, and that's pretty amazing. First, I'd like to, if you will, back up a little bit to the aircraft that you designed for aerobatic flight. That's that's something that, once again, not everybody can do either. You've got a lot of talent here.
Well, you know, I was in the Miami area, and Curtis Pitts was in the area. He was a fascinating person. I used to go down when I was in fly a Cessna 150, you know, into his little small strip down there and just ooh and awe and ask lots of questions. And, of course, there was a lot of biplane Pitts influence early on in my career. And, you know, with my experience with the Pitt Special, I kind of took what Curtis had kind of started with and probably thought I was making a better thing, and actually I think I did at some point, but came up with the Weeks Special. It was quite a bit different than a Pitts. Originally I was going to name it a Super Pitts and honor Curtis, but he looked at it, and I heard through the grapevine he didn't want anything to do with it. It was so different, and so I understood from his perspective. So for lack of a better name, I called it a Weeks Special.
Right.
And in the end, I think he probably would have wished it would have had a Pitts name on it. But from that airplane, I flew in two world championships, won 8 medals, and the Weeks Solution came along with the biggest engine anybody had ever put in an airplane like that. It was 300 horsepower at the time. It was just a monster.
I bet that was. So the first one was, what variations did you think that you needed from the Pitts Special to make that?
The main thing was, is I swept the lower wings. The Pitt Special has straight bottom wings and a 6.5-degree sweep on the top wing. Based on knowing that the Bucher Youngmeister was such a great snapping airplane with both swept lower wings, I swept both of my wings, top and bottom. I was the first person to fly an airplane like that with a 200 horsepower and a constant speed propeller. Eventually, later, Curtis got the S1T going, which became type certified. I also, having done a lot of tests and stuff, I ended up doing something nobody had ever done before. I had no dihedral in the bottom wing. I had no incidents. the incidence was absolutely flat, because when you do vertical rolls, you know, you don't want anything. And when you're flying upside down half the time,
right,
why do you want positive incidence?
Right, then you have to make an adjustment for it.
No incidence, no dihedral, and I also went with symmetrical ailerons, which eventually the Pitts factory called me later and asked me what I'd done, and now symmetrical ailerons are standard on all Pitts specials. So.
How about that? Yeah, interesting.
So it was really neat. There was a lot of things. A couple things I tried that didn't work out, but most of those things became pretty much standard. I borrowed some great ideas. I had a sprung aluminum landing gear. My friend Henry Haig, you know, had kind of pioneered that on the biplanes. And then from that evolved the weak solution, which was just an unbelievable amount of power. In fact, I went and I got a big fish scale. And, of course, everybody back in those days was saying, oh, well, I've got this crossover exhaust, and I've got this special and this and that, and I got 10-to-1 pistons. And everybody's saying how much power they got. And I'm going, you know, let's just try it out. So I went and bought a big fish scale, like a 4,000-pound fish scale.
Yes, right.
And we would tie everybody out on the ramp and go full throttle and measure how many pounds of thrust they were pulling.
That's pretty smart.
And at sea level in Miami, the weak solution had a power of weight of 1-to-1 at sea level, which was pretty amazing.
That's pretty amazing. That is pretty amazing. You know, it's kind of ingenious that what you came up with to use a fish scale. You know, we see that we'll have dynamometers and everything.
We use for
engines. Well, how can you test the power of an airplane engine?
Yeah.
What can you use? That was using your brain.
It was simple, that was too. So anyway, good.
Keep it simple. Sometimes works the best. But so that was probably quite a challenge to be able to start making these, you know, with the solution and even the previous one, to come up with, you know, you had engineering things. You know, did you have a background in that, or did you?
Well,
have to
that's another interesting story. I started when I was building my airplane in high school, my first one, which was a set of plans. I taught myself how to weld at the, you know, with a little bit of help at the workshop up at Oshkosh,
right.
Borrowed a welder. And anyway, I ended up, developing the week special and then the solution. I forgot the question you asked me.
Well, you had engineering. You had a lot of different things. You had
so,
to come into play.
Well, basically what happened was I missed some of my schooling because I was working on my first airplane.
Right.
I finally got serious about school. I'd been out for a couple of years. I got accepted at Purdue University.
Oh.
They had a great aeronautical engineering school. I retook my whole freshman program over. I was serious this time. I'd finished my airplane and had been a distraction before. And life had a different plan. I did pretty good in my freshman year. By that time, I had acquired a Pitts S2A. I was starting to fly competition in my own airplane. And I arrived at school after having flown a lot of contests over the summer. And I had 103 fever. I was registering for classes. I went down to the infirmary. They quarantined me for 2 weeks.
Not 2 weeks.
I missed the first 2 weeks of school. I finally threw in the towel. I gave up. I said, I can do this. I went home with no formal aeronautical engineering training. I designed the special. Then I designed the solution, and it was all eyeball engineering. And based on my, you know, my experience with the Pitt special and stuff.
Knowing what you needed.
And there was a couple of things where I knew I was venturing into territory that I knew there was an issue, and I knew I was smart enough to ask a question. So I would go down. There was two times I went down and I had Curtis's engineer do a calculation for me.
Mm-hmm.
I went back. I used the tubing sizes that he told me, and he kept me from busting my butt. So thank you, Curtis and his engineer.
Absolutely. So that was kind of walking on new territory, new ground there, too. Once you tested, then you had to, well, it's time to go fly this thing, right?
And the sky was my wind tunnel.
I understand. Well, you have to admire that. You know, that's a lot of, not a lot of people would do that, and you've you really broke some new ground there. And thinking about where you started with your roots, you know, and at a young age, and then gathering some of that knowledge that you did, and then also kind of going out on your own, kind of going out on a limb. And
you know, one of the most proudest things in my life was that time when not only was I flying well, and I was winning medals because of my flying ability, but I was doing them in airplanes that I designed and built and modified and continued to modify all by myself. I was the test pilot, I was the engineer, I was the manufacturer, and I was the pilot. So I was That's probably one of the proudest things I've done in my life.
That has to be. You know, think about it. You can say, hey, that's my airplane. How many aerobatic performers can say that? Not many.
Back then, we were competing against the Russians were our biggest nemesis, and they were all pretty much state-sponsored. The pilots would be given the airplanes, and that was kind of their job. You know, and this was just a side hobby for us on the U.S. team.
Yeah, but we had to do it, though. You know, we got to beat the Russians,
of course. Yeah, we did it. It was always, you know, we would alternate back and forth, you know, but that was a great time in my life.
So then what, from the special, and then you moved into the solution.
Yep.
And then where did those, what kind of ever came of those? Anything
other
than
just, I tell you
did
what.
Did you have just a couple of them that you used personally, or did you?
Well, what happened was, as far as the aerobatic career went, is I flew, my last world championship was in 1992. And it was at Le Havre, France, and they only flew one flight, so it was declared a non-world contest. They gave out medals. You had to have at least two flights to declare a world champion.
Okay.
And the weather was bad. It was on the coast of the English Channel, and anyway, that's history.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew home. We were very fortunate. The Air Force flew us home in a C-5A. We landed at Dover, Delaware.
Put the airplane in the back?
Yeah. No, in the belly.
Yes.
10 airplanes.
Yeah.
Just take the wheel pants off. We'd roll 10 airplanes in. And then basically we would put the wheel pants on when we got to Dover. I flew directly to the air show at Oshkosh. I flew in the air show. And I went home after the contest. And the following weekend, April 24th, 1992, Hurricane Andrew rolled through Miami, one of the two Hurricane Fives that's ever hit the United States.
Yes.
And just devastated my museum. It crushed my weak solution, ripped the wings off my weak special, and I realized the life was telling me, Kermit, you've been doing this for a long time. And my heart was broken to have to rebuild my airplanes, but I realized by that point the biplane was pretty much a thing of the past. I was going to have to build another airplane, a monoplane, and my heart just wasn't in it. And so I then Fantasy of Flight became my focus.
And so that's how then... Because of the hurricane, did you move to?
Not exactly. That was partly was an impetus to push me along, but I had been working on the Fantasy of Flight concept for 4 years.
While you were still in Miami,
right? And in August, you know, we could see the light at the end of the tunnel. We could see we were getting close to the end of the permitting process, which had taken me 4 years. And literally 4 months after Hurricane Andrew hit, they handed me my permit. And it was time for me to start a new phase in my life. So,
well, that was it was probably meant to be then.
Yeah,
you know?
Now we're up here close to Sun and Fun, you know, so it was a nice neighborhood, a
absolutely.
Lot of airplane people.
Right. So then you moved to where your current location for Fantasy of Flight, mm-hmm. But now you still have aircraft in other locations.
Well, I have aircraft, we've got 4 or 5 here on display at Sun and Fun year-round. And I have projects that are out in different locations around the world where there might be a specialty shop where somebody focuses on one kind of an airplane. But we've got, oh man, we must have 6 or 7 projects going on right now just at Fantasy of Flight. So,
interesting. Can you talk about it? Or is it going to be kind of something you want to write?
No, but I tell you what, one of the most exciting things we're doing right now, which is normally we have all the time in the world that we need, but we're recreating the Tony Janus airplane, the Benoit, that New Year's Day 1914, he flew the first paying scheduled passenger on an airline service in an airplane, and he flew from St. Petersburg to Tampa across the bay, and what normally took 5 hours in a train, he did in 20 minutes. The ticket price was $5 at the time.
$5.
And over about 3 or 4 months, they successfully flew 1,250 passenger flights without any incidences. And Tony Janus and that Benoit airplane started the modern airline industry. So we've taken it upon ourselves to recreate. We're reproducing the airplane. Mm-hmm. We're actually we're manufacturing an engine from scratch, the original engine. And I hope New Year's Day 2014, I'm going to be flying across Tampa Bay.
We're going to be watching for that.
And, you know, we got about 8 months to go, so the clock's ticking.
Man, that's going to be pretty neat. Now,
So that's really our front burner project. We've got some other things we're working on, some World War I airplanes. We've got a we do a restoration tour as part of our Fantasy Flight ticket price every day. And then back there, I've got a sheet metal magician working on a Sivirsky P-35. There's only three in the world. This is the only one that's ever going to fly. And it is immaculate. It is a mirror. I mean, I'll be able to shave in it without a problem.
Right.
That rare airplane is a beautiful job.
That's going to be nice. That's one of those things they say you can eat off of, mm-hmm. right? Right.
Yesterday, of course, we hosted the Splash In, the Sun and Phone mm-hmm. Splash In. I got a chance to fly my Sikorsky S-39, which is the little giraffe, you know, airplane. It was built in 1931. And since that time, I've also had the opportunity to acquire the Zebra painted one, which is the S-38 that was here 1 year, I believe.
It was a predecessor then, I guess, to the 39?
Well, yes. It was a bigger airplane. It's a twin engine, and when the Depression hit, they realized it was a pretty expensive airplane, so they made a smaller single engine version. That's why the smaller one, you would have thought they would have been swapped,
yeah,
but they built
versa.
The big one first and then the little one. And about 4 months ago, I acquired an airplane I've been looking at for a long time. It'll be here in June. We're going to disassemble it because it needs some work. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. You know, they've got the Howard Hughes collection here at Sun and Fun.
Here in the museum.
I acquired the Sikorsky S-43 that Howard Hughes bought in 1937 to fly around the world.
The
Sikorsky, Howard Hughes' airplane. It's going to be at Fantasy Flight at the end of this year. And I'm very excited about that. And it's just what an unbelievable treasure. So now I've got the S-39, the S-38, and the S-43.
How did you even find it?
Well, most people knew of the airplane, but they didn't know that it still existed. A gentleman purchased it from the Hughes Corporation. I saw it at Oshkosh in 1994 when I was there with my short Sunderland big four-engine flying boat. Oh, yeah, it was flying. I made a mental note to myself. I said, boy, I'd like to get that one day. You know?
I need to put a tracker on that thing.
Oh, my God. So anyway, the gentleman passed away at some point, and the estate was in the process of trying to sell it. And lo and behold, it took a lot of time, but finally got down to where I could afford it. So.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. But that's excellent. What all is it going to need? Then what will you do? You're going to completely take it
well,
down and restore it?
You know, the airplane, they basically IRAN'd it when it came out of from the Hughes thing. It hadn't flown since 1952. So they went through and made sure everything was fine. They recovered it, repainted it.
Kind of mechanically?
Yeah, they mechanically went through it, so it was safe.
Sure.
But they didn't go through the airplane.
Yeah, make it aesthetically.
Right. And so the airplane hadn't flown in 7 years. And basically, the fabric, some of it didn't test. It was going to need to be patched. There was some corrosion in the hull. I didn't buy the airplane not to put it in the water. And so, you know, the more I looked at it, we went there about 3 months ago with the intent of what it's going to take to get it flying mm-hmm. again.
A little scouting mission.
And after about 3 hours, I said, you know, we need to do this and honor Howard in the way that he would have done it. We're going to fly it home, risk the airplane, mm-hmm. only to take it apart. Let's mm-hmm. just take it apart here, take it home, and let's do it right. So,
yeah. So
we're going to do that to honor Howard and in the way that he would have done it.
Excellent.
So.
Yeah, he would, you know, that would be something he would be probably pretty honored that you actually, you know,
yeah.
do that. Well, think about it. You know,
and
that's,
I tell you what, if anybody's interested, there's a backstory to the acquisition of the airplane that is beyond this reality. I mean, he showed up in dreams. He showed up and came to me at some point and said he was going to help me get the airplane. If anybody's interested, go to my blog, Kermit Weeks' blog. It's the last blog post I made, so it would be like around, you know, April of 2013.
Yep.
2013. And you can read the backstory. And anyway, I've got a lot of people follow me on Facebook, you know, Kermit Weeks Facebook.
Good.
And, you know, kind of daily things that are happening. And anytime I go on a road trip or something, everybody goes along with me. So
that's excellent.
Yeah.
They can kind of follow along because with that, it's such a project as one of many of the projects. But that's something that's exciting that everybody can kind of, you can, with today's social media, you know, you can.
It's really amazing. I get a couple of times I've just thrown a little GoPro camera on my head. I call it a Kermit cam. And if you look up on YouTube, actually, there's a lot of, look up Kermit Weeks YouTube. I've flown the P-51C and the Wildcat and the mm-hmm. PO-2 and the Grumman Duck and the what else have I flown? The T-6 and stuff, you know, and, you know, you watch these little clips and people go flying with me and the thing, and I point to things and talk about it.
Well, because you got the GoPro going on.
I got the GoPro going, and everybody loves those. So
yeah, they're sweet.
Check those out on YouTube.
Well, we're going to have to. I definitely will, because that's going to be a lot of exciting information. And then shooting photos of the project as it's going on and putting it on the Facebook, is that kind of what you guys were thinking about doing, just to keep everybody kind of updated as some changes come?
The Facebook thing is something that, you know, obviously everybody's doing, and people really enjoy following, you know, what I'm doing. I've only been doing this for just over a year. This week I'll probably hit 5,000 followers. Fantasy of Flight's been doing it longer than I have. We're over 21,000 followers on Facebook.
On your Fantasy of Flight Facebook
Fantasy
page.
Of Flight Facebook. So, you know, that's more oriented to what's happening at the attraction and
sure.
special things and stuff. And the Kermit Weeks one is just more personally what I'm doing. So.
But which one do you think that you might want to put the project on with – with this
when well there you, it's it'll be on both of them for
okay.
sure. Yeah, when it shows up at Fantasy Flight, it'll be on both of them,
that but way everybody knows where they can look for
exactly
it.
But if you want to follow me while I'm twisting the wrenches, taking the wings off, then go on the Kermit Weeks one. So
well, that's what we'll have to do, because I think that's going to be you got a lot of exciting projects going on, man. That's
unbelievable. And you know, in the long run, people have to understand there's a lot of airplane enthusiasts that come through Fantasy Flight, but I'm really trying to create something that touches everybody that comes through the door. And I discovered that not everybody likes airplanes. Everybody at some level has a fascination for flight. And I think it's because of what the metaphor symbolizes, because more than anything, flight symbolizes pushing our boundaries, reaching beyond ourselves, and freedom at some level.
That was a word I thought of when you just started talking about that. I thought, you know, freedom is one, because getting off the ground, not everybody can do it.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to do it. A lot of people dream of doing it. And so that's going to be a big deal.
And in the you know, I kind of use two examples. In the physical world, everybody can relate to the metaphor reaching for the sky and reaching for the stars, which really doesn't have anything to do with airplanes. It has
right.
everything to do with going beyond what you perceive yourself
yes.
to be. That's really where Fantasy of Flight's going. That's really what Fantasy of Flight's all about.
That's excellent. That's really cool, and that's a lot of fun. So Fantasy of Flight has a lot of attractions. So people that want to come there, there's a lot of things. What all can they see there?
Well, of course, the facility is all period Art Deco. We got an Art Deco restaurant. We have tours throughout the day, the wood shop restoration tour. We go to the maintenance facility. We're the only facility on the planet that flies a vintage airplane every day on the schedule, weather permitting.
Which is?
We'll fly anything from the storage. So if I'm in town, I'll fly the P-51, the Wildcat, the
Sweet.
Duck or something. We just opened something that's really exciting. It hasn't been open all that long. I've got two 20,000 square foot storage facilities. You know, everybody's heard of the Silver Hill storage facility at the Smithsonian
yes.
in Maryland. Well, Kermit just opened the Golden Hill storage facility tour.
All right.
So anyway, so if you come over there, you get to go see 40,000 square foot of projects in waiting that one day we hope to restore to flying.
So that's going to be these are going to be projects, the aircraft that you've acquired that's just
yep.
got to wait in line.
Everybody gets to see everything. So there's a lot to do at Fantasy of Flight. If you haven't been there in a while, come back and see us. And if you haven't been there at all, you come and see us regardless.
Excellent. What about for the children? I guess there's you probably
we've got a little,
some little
place
things for them to see. That's kind of
we've
hard.
Got, we got a little thing for the kids. And in the room there, we have got a hang glider simulator, a balloon simulator, some little things that can make paper airplanes and throw through stuff.
Keeps
and,
them occupied.
Yep.
While the parents and the grown-ups adults are looking around and checking things out. So excellent. Let me ask you a question, because I'm a helicopter pilot also.
Uh-huh.
Do you do any helicopter flying?
I have a Bell 47 that I currently fly. I've got a Hiller Hornet that I've flown once, you know, the one with the ramjet engines.
Right.
It's like a Roman candle when it flies. And last year I was very fortunate to acquire the only standard category Sikorsky S-55. Which
really?
Was like the old big helicopter. You used to pick the space capsules up and stuff. You
kind
know?
Of a heavy lift.
Yeah, the heavy lift kind of one. And it was one of the helicopters that was in the original helicopter airline service, New York Airways. And this helicopter flew out of New York and used to go to LaGuardia and Newark. And
excellent.
So,
that's pretty interesting. I need to come down and see
that's
that.
That's a Golden Hill. You can come and see it on the tour.
I think I'll need to check that out, you know. Doing both, it's fun to fly both. And, you know, flying a helicopter is the fun thing about that. It's you're right down there low flying around over the, you know, just above the ground. You're not real high, which, of course, you can fly airplanes like that as you do.
Oh, yeah, out over the Everglades. You're not hurting anybody, and the alligators don't complain.
Yeah, they don't complain. They're just saying, come on down, you know. So, excellent. Now you've also got you got your book. You're here doing the book signing.
I am, actually. I'm sitting over here signing, and I've got my first book, which is a great example of where Fantasy of Flight's headed. Everybody recognizes the little famous yellow airplane GBZ on the front. I actually I took 10 historic characters, airplanes, real airplanes from the golden age of aviation. I created characters out of them, hired some Disney-trained illustrators,
excellent,
did a phenomenal job with the artwork.
Beautiful.
So that's an example of how things at Fantasy Flight, we deliver based on things that are real. Unlike my big friends up the street. But this is a personal example of what the Fantasy of Flight concept's mm-hmm. about, which is about discovering potential within yourself. I never did well in English. I always knew that I needed to create characters for the park, mm-hmm. and so I got to write books. So I talked to grade school teachers, I researched books, I self-published this myself.
Really?
And out of 65 contestant entries, my first book ever, never did well in English, I got a Bronze Independent Book Publishing Award.
I see that.
So that's a personal example of
a great achievement. And it looks like that book is something that, of course, is going to appeal to adults, but even kids are going to, you know, they're going to pick that up and they're going to be interested in that.
Absolutely. And now, guess what? Kermit loves to write children's books. And when I wrote the first book, I only had about 3 of the characters. And over the years, I've picked up a couple of more. I didn't realize I was going to have to collect them all. So anyway, so I'm still buying my Cracker Jack boxes. But this one, I'm very proud of. Of course, it's based on a character that we all can recognize there, Lindy.
Yep.
And he gets built. It's very historically accurate, except for the fact that the little airplane characters build Lindy, and it takes place at Fantasy of Flight. But he flies the Atlantic. And I got smart on this book. I added 2 new characters. I don't write any more books unless I already own the characters. So.
So that way you can include those in there. And who knows, maybe there'll be even more characters that you come up with.
I've got ideas for at least a dozen more books. So anyway, I'm signing here at Sun and Fun. But if people are interested, you can buy them at Fantasy of Flight, or you can buy them on the Fantasy of Flight online bookstore.
On the website. Uh-huh. Excellent. That's excellent. Well, it's funny that I mentioned about, you know, some of the things for children at Fantasy of Flight, and then sure enough, you already have it, and you have it some things for them to read and look at and learn. You know, we've been talking about getting, you know, our youth involved in aviation and what's the future of aviation and how it's important to, I guess, contribute and make some resources available through some of the, you know, some of the sponsors and like the Central Florida Aerospace Academy mm-hmm. and how what they're doing over there and like what Lights is doing with the Sun and Fun and just providing the future for aviation as we continue to get older and a lot of the baby boomers, you know, are kind of phasing out. Well, then we got to think about the future, and right there is the future.
Well, you know, I see it from a little bit different perspective in that what we do, you know, I'm on the board of the EAA and I've been a member since I'm 15 years old, and you know, we finally got what EAA is about, and it is the spirit of aviation. You know, it's not about home building. I mean, that's part of it, but it's literally about the spirit of aviation. And that's really comes back to the metaphor that I was talking about, Fantasy of Flight. We can relate to reaching for the sky, reaching for the stars. Within us, we soar in our imagination, we fly in our dreams.
Right.
And so I think what we do now literally is, it really has no, the bulk of what we do at EAA doesn't have a lot of commercial value, except if we're selling to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's not like the boundaries haven't been pushed and that kind of stuff. So to me, the value is like, it's like sailing was 150 years ago. Sailing ruled the planet.
Right.
Commerce. It was how you traveled. It's the way we waged war. Sailing has no commercial value anymore, but people still sail. Why?
Pleasure.
It's the intrinsic value of the experience, and that's what the spirit of aviation is about. It's about, you know, making something with your hands. It's about creating something. It's mm-hmm. about going beyond yourself and dreaming and imagining. That's the spirit of aviation, and that's what Fantasy of Flight's all about. And that's what I think that why people are drawn to this, even if they're not airplane people, because all of us can relate to imagining beyond ourselves and trying to take steps to attain that.
Absolutely,
dream.
Looking to the sky. Like you said, you know, not everybody may fly themselves, but everybody has that kind of passion and desire to.
Absolutely. And even if they don't get into aviation, everybody can dream about where they want to go in something. And the spirit of aviation and the metaphor of flight is the most profound personification of that expression, I believe, in this reality.
Well, you've certainly had a very interesting career in everything that you're doing for aviation, and it's been interesting and very enjoyable talking with you.
Well, thank you, Rich, for inviting me over.
I appreciate you taking the time to do it.
Yeah, good deal. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well,
appreciate
it. We can talk to you again, soon.
Good deal. I got some people over here waiting to get some books signed,
well,
so thank you so much. I appreciate
thank you.
It.
Well, I'm your host, Rich Weber, for the Florida Aviation Network, and we've been talking with Mr. Kermit Weeks, the founder and owner of Fantasy of Flight. We've got some other great, exciting shows ahead for you. We're here at Sun and Fun 2013, so stay tuned, and we'll be talking to you soon.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.